49 Mackay Street. And now, to end off Native Solidarity News tonight, we will listen to a song by Ceremony, and Ceremony is the third musical act that is part of the film Determination Songs. So stay tuned for Soul Perspectives.
You're listening to Radio Freethinker, and this is the Symphony of Science.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, the rest of the universe atomic.
I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man's. He's never gonna let us relax.
We live in an in-between universe where things change all right, but according to patterns, rules, or as we call them, laws of nature.
I'm this guy standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck. I'm just a speck compared with a star. The planet is just another speck. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space. There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. And know itself. Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically, to the rest of the universe atomic.
Find it elevating and exhilarating to discover that we live in a universe which permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker, and that was Symphony of Science, We Are All Connected. And that was also Carl Sagan in there, as well with Bill Nye and Stephen Hawking and Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I am Ethan, your freethinking historian.
This is Don, your political science philosopher.
And this is Rob, cognitive psychologist. And speaking of Carl Sagan, yesterday was Carl Sagan's birthday.
Woohoo! Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Carl Sagan, who had a profound effect on the modern movement of skepticism in North America. And actually, I just recently have been almost finished rewatching Cosmos, his big series that he did in the 80s about trying to bring science to the world.
13 episodes of wonder. Yeah, I mean, some definitely. Of the science has become a little dated, and if you're lucky, you can get the, there was a reissue of it, a 10th anniversary, where he went and he updated it. But even that's about 15
years
old.
Isn't
it? I think 93 was...
But it is remarkable how well that's held up.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I was watching it, you know, over the past couple of weeks, and you see the stuff that he's talking about is still incredibly applicable to today's world.
Well, and a lot of it, too, I think, is his idea of taking one, explaining historical aspects of science. How do we learn about things? How does wonder happen? I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, the wonder that that guy did inspire in so many people, and it still continues today. I mean, one of the things, and it's something I think we're going to be talking about, if he was the idea of space exploration and should man go out into space. After you watch Cosmos, if you don't think space exploration or going out and colonizing the space is not a good idea,
then you weren't paying attention, you know?
Yeah. Well, I thought it'd be kind of neat if we all sort of talked about the influence Carl Sagan had on us as skeptics. And, you know, for me, I was a pretty... I'll use the word gullible person growing up. I pretty much believed anything I heard. And it wasn't until, you know, I became a critical thinker, you know, towards the end of high school. But when I read The Demon-Haunted World, which is probably the best introduction to skepticism bar any book in the universe, it really changed the way I look at things. And it was just a remarkable change for me. I was interested in science. I believed in things like Atlantis and aliens, but it wasn't because I was an idiot. It was because I was being fed the wrong information. I was completely misinformed about the nature of the world. And Carl Sagan, straighten me out.
Yeah, well, for myself, right, and not to date myself, but I remember watching the original series when it was put on PBS, and I don't read a lot, but in those days, I got as a Christmas gift the book, and I read it from cover to cover. And for me, it inspired, like, to keep in our theme, skepticism, was the idea, you know, that there's so much out in the world that is so wondrous that you don't need to have fairy tales to tell about it. That, in fact, it's inspiring to try and figure out how the universe works and not to put on these big placeholders. Although it did do one thing, which I think is positive, but other people might consider to be negative. He goes into the sacking of the Library of Alexandria and how that was done for essentially demagoguery and religious reasons. And I think that was at the point where I switched from being an agnostic on religion to being what I would call today a fundamentalist atheist, is the idea that how ignorance can destroy knowledge, right? And it doesn't have to be just in that one context. But, that was the other thing he was showing. You know, sometimes it's not safe to sit back and say, well, everyone can have their beliefs, you know, because we can all coexist. Well, sometimes they can't. And sometimes, you know, there is science, there's truth, there's knowledge, and sometimes there are just lies, there are just, you know, falsehoods, and they can be very dangerous.
My own contact with Carl Sagan actually was through the movie Contact. I saw it in theaters and I loved it, and it just set me off on this, you know, wow, science is so cool, look at all this stuff that, you know, that's possible. But also sort of tangentially through my childhood interest in magic, I found out about James Randi, another massive luminary in the world of skepticism, and found out about his appearances on the Johnny Carson show, the Tonight Show, you know, and saw found Carl Sagan on his numerous appearances and parodies by Carson on the Tonight Show, and found out, you know, hey, this is interesting, and then sort of spilled into the entire world of skepticism.
Well, it actually is kind of interesting because you brought up James Randi, but in our song, Bill Nye, Neil deGrasse Tyson, these were all people who were inspired by Carl Sagan. I mean, Bill Nye was a student of Carl Sagan's in university, so it's quite remarkable, and it's great that people have taken up the cause and that we have these great people in the movement who are inspiring and exciting and, you know, great teachers.
I think, too, it's important to remember that like some of these other people, right? I mean, Carl Sagan was really a scientist, too, and he was heavily involved in the Voyager mission, the Viking mission. I mean, one of the things with Voyager is the famous gold record.
Records and little plaques on them with he and another person, Frank Drake, who invented the Drake equation, you know, talking about the possibility of life in the universe. He and Drake designed those plaques. His then wife drew the pictures of naked man and woman that are etched onto the gold.
But not naked, biologically correct.
His son, I think, was the voice of the child on the record.
Well, there's one side of it is just the sounds of Earth, music, animals, the whole thing. The other side is how to play the record, because you can't assume that, you know, aliens who might find this will have a record player just lying around. Plus some other scientific things, you know. Again, if you listen to Contact, if you ever watch the movie or read the book, and I think the book is much better than the movie, no offense to Jodie Foster or anything, but it goes through, you know, some of the fundamental difficulties that you would have in trying to communicate through species, through space, or whatever. But they're not insurmountable. They're quite simple. And because they're common to everyone, it's actually easy in a way.
Well, while we're on the topic of talking about science, we were recently at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Expo about, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks ago. We made a lot of recordings, and we aired some of them last week. And we have some more for you today. So why don't we start off with the one that we call the Rune Reader. We'll play that for you, and then Rob, you can tell us a bit about it after we listen to it.
Yeah, just as a bit of setup, this is an interview I did sort of off the cuff with someone who was one of the diviners, the many diviners at the festival, and she reads ancient runes.
We're at the Body, Soul, and Spirit Expo in Vancouver, doing some interviews. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Cindy Natishan.
And what do you do?
I'm a rune reader here in town. I'm one of the only rune readers in the Expo today. And in the province of Alberta, where I'm from, I am one of two people left doing this tradition professionally.
What is rune reading? How does it differ from other types of readings?
Rune reading is a Viking style of reading, as opposed to tarot cards where you'll see all over the room, all over North America. It's quite common with people. The runes are a Viking tradition and their language. So there are symbols engraved on stone pieces, and every symbol represents a word and a whole concept around that. It's called casting the runes. When you cast them on the table, they form messages of guidance. Each rune separately has a message for you, and then when you read them together, those sentences become a message also over one's past, present, and future. So they cover finance, romance, employment, family life, and health in detail. And the message is something very personal because the client actually chooses their own runes without knowing what they mean yet. That's not a coincidence in my books, but they look similar to as Egyptians had hieroglyphics. That would be the Viking style of divination.
How does it compare to other types of divination? Like, does it look at different parts of life, or is it more accurate, or how does it compare?
More accurate depends on the reader. How a reader does accuracy-wise depends on whether they're really using what their strength is, and the medium should determine that. So if someone just sticks to tarot cards, maybe that's all they're strong at, and hopefully they have mastered at least the tarot cards and can be accurate that way. I'm fifth generation to be doing this, and all of my rune sets have been actually willed to me from my ancestors, so I've inherited them. That's why this is my accuracy gift. It's what I'm most comfortable at, but people starting off, maybe learning, who don't even have it in their family, do find them quite difficult. Otherwise, other mediums can use anything from tarot cards to crystal ball. The information you get is what you want to ask about before you get a reading. What information? And as I listed those five areas, plus any other questions people have, you get a sense of what my readings are about. But you could have things, what I like to call personality reading. I'm not a big fan of those, but they will say, for example, you, my dear, in front of me, are a very nice lady. You're a little bitchy once a month, etc. And who can't really relate to that? It's quite general, if you ask me. You're nodding your head, so you know what I mean when I say personality reading. That's nothing to do with divination, if you were to ask me, but a lot of people get away with that. So before you choose a reader, I would ask, what type of information do you cover? My style is very blunt and straightforward. I don't believe in sugarcoating anything, but I also know what I would want to take away with, and that's hard evidence, hardcore information, very practical, that I can use every day. So I'm a very realistic reader, nothing mysterious about this. My background even says that.
So how does rune reading work?
The casting of the runes is a bit of a process to that. You lay out the runes in front of the client. They place their hands over the entire pile. They start thinking about their life and manifesting, realizing what are all the areas they want the reading to cover. As they're doing that, certain areas are appearing to them quite automatically, and it's a practice in using your intuition. So right away I ask them, pay attention specifically, what are some of those areas, and start to repeat them like a mantra to yourself. From there, they're interacting with every rune. They have to touch every rune separately, and there is a mantra that they actually recite, and that's something I have no idea what they're saying in their mind. And when they finally are finished going through the whole pile of runes, they connect them again all together and are choosing their runes without looking at the symbols. That's very important. You can't judge a book by its cover. They don't even know what the symbols mean, but they're handing them to me, and I'm placing them on the table in a pattern, and then I read the runes, and they are nodding their heads or whatnot. They're connecting, whether it's outwardly expressed or not, to what I'm saying, and I don't like them to say or ask any questions until I'm done the reading, and then they can ask away.
All right. Thank you very much.
We're back on Radio Free Thinker. So, Rob, what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, Rob, hold on, before you, did you ask her a specific question? I'm just dying to know how much more specific she is over the personality readers.
I didn't ask her any question because she still insisted on charging for the reading. But a lot of interesting things come out of this this little interview, namely that she seemed a lot more
grounded?
Yeah, more accepting of the idea that a lot of stuff to do with this is bunk, especially in that little section where she talks about other diviners doing personality readings, and basically right out and says that some of that stuff is really general and could apply to anybody. But what also interested me was the sort of how it's so similar to other kinds of divination forms. It's, you know, tarot cards, rolling the dice, throwing the bones, whatever you want. It's all based on looking at patterns that come out of random stuff. And she talked about how people do the readings. She talked about how, you know, she'll pick out the random stuff and then she'll see them nodding and she'll know that she's on the right track and things like that. So there is something to be said for the intuition, but it's not an intuition into something that you can't, you know, experience. It's an intuition into some of the behaviors that the person you're reading is exhibiting while you're doing the reading.
The idea of cold reading, essentially, is kind of what she's doing. She's getting feedback from the person, so she knows, okay, I should go in this direction more, as opposed to some mystic power that's directing her. I mean, she just said right there, the mystic powers have nothing to do with really what she's doing. She's looking what the person wants to hear.
So it's intuition, but not in the sort of mystical sense that you might expect to be found at these kinds of expos.
Right. And we'll have some more recordings from the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo right after this.
Hey, we're J plus J plus J, and I bet you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
The sitar.
We call it that. Do you?
You should. Unless you don't like sitars.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker, and I was just being corrected. It's not the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo. It's the
Body, Soul, and Spirit.
Right, there's no minds involved.
Ouch.
What? I was just, the word mind does not appear. I don't know what you guys were talking about. We have some more recordings here. This one is quite interesting. This is the Quantum Pendant. So take a listen to this.
This is a recording from the Body, Soul, and Spirit Expo in Vancouver, and it's an explanation on how quantum medallions work.
Okay, he's world renowned. So his history of water is he'd go all over the world and they would do certain experiments on water, put the word love on the one, put the word hate on the other one. So then they would photograph it on a molecular level, the crystals freeze the water, and then they'd notice that the word hate is fragmented, the water, the crystal is fragmented. Then on the word love, it's perfectly pristine like a snowflake. And they've done tons of experiments with various things, putting Tibetan prayers on things, and the water structure would literally change. Take polluted water, bless the water, and the molecular structure would change. So his philosophy is, imagine if we have that effect on water, what effect you have on your own body. Because people get up in the morning and I say, like, oh, I'm exhausted, I'm fat, I'm tired. So we're creating all this negativity. You are 90% fluid. So if you start being kind to yourself, you can literally change your life. That's his work. So he's a physicist. He endorses our product. For him to put his name and his reputation on something is a big deal for us. It's based on scalar energy. Nikola Tesla discovered scalar energy way back in a different century. There's two places on the planet with very high scalar energy, Japan and Germany. I find it fascinating because people are super efficient there. They've then taken the minerals from those places, fused it and bonded on a molecular level with Japanese technology. Okay, 200 minerals independent, there's about 70 of them that emit scalar energy. So by emitting scalar energy, what's happening? Your biofuel is being protected against EMFs, computers, any sort of wireless, even the lighting in this room. Okay.
What's a biofuel?
It's an energy field around your body. Okay. Apart from the biofield, that's the external. So it protects you from any EMFs coming in. Okay, there's a lot of research showing that how cell phones affect our bodies. The second thing is it changes the water structure inside your body, so it works on the lymphatic system, so therefore improving your immune system. So the best thing for me to do is to show you how it works. Okay? So I'd like to do a balance test on you. All right? What you're going to do it on you first. You're going to stand like this. Okay? Hands like that together. Feet together. Stiff as an ironing board, okay? Don't bend back or pull forward. It's not a strength test. I'm going to put gradual pressure down into your hand just to see at what point you lose your balance, okay? Okay, stiff as an ironing board. You're going to hold this quite tight. Stiff as an ironing board. So, there we go, all right? You felt that? Easy to put you over, right? Now put the quantum pendant on you. About a minute. And I'll do various tests on you. No, not necessary.
So it could just be right over my jacket here?
Yeah, that's fine. Like this again, all right? Again, stiff as an iron board, feel the difference in your own body, okay? Interesting, right? Interesting. Have you got your camera, Sheila? I'd like to show them what we filmed yesterday. I'll do another test, and you can take that off for me for a second. do a test on you.
And we're back. So it probably couldn't quite tell there, but what was going on was Rob was wearing one of these pendants.
Yeah, it's like this it's about 2 inches across and
like a standard metal like you would win in a competition.
Except it's sort of made out of this like dull black metal type thing. And it's on a pendant, you put it around your neck, you put it over, you know, wherever. And what she had me do was she had me put my hands behind my back and she sort of pushed down into them. And I fell over the first time because I was off balance. And then the second time she has me put on the pendant, she pushes down, I don't fall over. What is not apparent from the audio that we had, and we do actually have video of another test she did with me, which we might put up on their website, but basically is that she gave me very specific instructions the first time, which you might have heard, to like keep my feet together and so on and so forth, basically making it easier for her to tip me over. And the second time, there were no such instructions, and because I'd just fallen over, I put my feet apart to stop myself, and then immediately she focuses on my hands, she pushes down again, but my feet are further apart, giving me, you know, more strength to bolster myself up. Not to mention that she may have been pushing, you know, harder the first time and less hard the second time.
The kind of similar thing happened to you on a last week's show when you were talking about
the allergy woman who was pulling my thumbs apart when, you know, it was easier when the so-called energy of the allergen was beside my wrist. And these are all, as we mentioned last time, sort of swami tricks that, you know, are used as sort of tricks of physicality of how the body works and how physics work to show, you know, some very amazing effects. And we actually have a video that, as I mentioned, which we'll put up on the website, of 4 people lifting me up bodily by their fingertips.
It's an impressive looking feat, but as you explained to me, it's actually quite easily explained once you understand what's going on there. And I assume that somebody must have taught her how to do these. Do you think that...
Sort of have this theory that a lot of the swami tricks and demonstrations that were going around on that show were taught to the demonstrators by other people, by possibly the people that they bought their product from or the suppliers of their base components, or, you know, someone who convinced them that it worked and they said, wow, this is really cool, let me get involved, I want to spread it around. So who knows where it came from originally. I suspect, you know, either a scam artist or some swami or something like that. But the idea is that it's sort of these demos, these really simple, really impressive demos are passed on and on.
I don't know. There's one thing that we've had an ongoing debate is at what point does it become a falsehood or a lie? I mean, okay, so maybe she isn't lying, but she's selling this product. And I think there's a certain responsibility for her to know what it is kind of she's doing. And you might give her a pass on, maybe not. But it's like people in the Nazi death camps were saying, well, I didn't know what was happening. Well,
did you just Godwin this conversation?
Yes.
Well, that was very bad of you, Donna. let's punish Don by going to commercial right now.
I believe I've survived for a reason to tell my story to touch life.
Hip-hop artist Emmanuel Jal, once a child soldier in Sudan, has returned to his home country, and this time his weapon is a microphone. His unique story and effort to build peace, War Child, is just one of the 25 films featured this year at the Amnesty International Film Festival, November 12th to 15th at the Van City Theater, 1181 Seymour Street. Full program available at amnestyfilmfest.ca. Brought to you in part by CITR Radio.
Me, I got a reason for being on this earth, cause I know more than many what's up. Life is worth enough. Now that I get a chance to stand my ground, I'm gonna run over mountains, leaps and bounds.
We're at the Body, Soul, and Spirit Expo in Vancouver, and we're going around asking people what energy is. Hi, what's your name?
My name's Ed Rankin.
And what do you do?
I write books on energy, particularly managing human subtle energy. I am have been a banker, have been in the monetary world for many years, and now I am an author of about 15 books on various topics that go from spirituality to commercial and the illusion that is being imposed upon mankind on this planet, and what is transpiring in the next few years as the planet changes its energy field.
And what is energy?
Energy, anybody will tell you, is everything that you ever... The whole universe is energy in different forms.
This is energy. This is energy. Everything you touch is energy. And if you take it down to a quantum level, quantum physics, then everything is energy in some vibrating form. It's in wave form. What we see as what we think is solid is also energy, but it is, vibrating at a different way. It's vibrating in an atomic structure. That's a solid structure. It's energy. If we look at 98% of the rest of the universe, including you, which science calls a vacuum, is energy in wave form waiting to be manifested into a solid form by your consciousness. So when you ask what is energy, everything is energy. It depends on the state of that energy. If you look at ice, it's energy. It's solid, it's in a solid form. If you put fire under it, it changes to water. Different properties, different energy. And if you put more fire under it, it changes to steam. Totally different properties, lighter weight, energy. It's just a translation or a shift in energy form. Heat it some more, it'll change into the original spiritual energy that makes up everything in the universe, which is quantum energy, which is just vibrating waves, and that's what energy is.
All right, thank you very much. So we're at the Body, Soul, and Spirit Expo in Vancouver, and we're going around asking people what energy is. So hi, what's your name?
My name's Steven.
And what do you do?
I'm an energy healer.
Perfect, so you know what about energy. What's energy to you?
Energy is a fluid, I'm going to give you two parts of it. Energy is a fluid-like substance that is around the body. Energy can be felt, it can be touched, and it can be played with. Energy necessarily doesn't have to mean colors. Okay? Energy is a clear fluid-like substance, the spirit. What happens is when energy passes through a prism, it begins colors, which are the colors of the chakra points or the rainbow per se. Same thing. So energy is a system that can be manipulated, can be used, and can be felt or touched. We cannot always see the energy, but we can often feel it. You can feel anger, you can feel guilt, you can feel shame, you can feel fear. That is energy. Just because you can't feel, just because you cannot see it, you sure can feel it. Some people can see energy, which is normal to see. And when we start removing the layers from our field, we begin to see more energy. When people say that they're sending energies, energies exist in the angelic kingdom. They exist in God and the universe. So energy doesn't have to be looked at as a substance or a matter. It can also be looked upon as our guides. Some of the angelic beings that come through as energies. They come through as energies that can be seen in light, or they can be come through as that fluid-like substance. Energy is not necessarily around humans, it's around all matter. So energy can be around the chair, it can be around the music stand in the booth, it can be around the table, it could be on a rock, it could be on the carpet. Basically, this whole world is conceptualized of energy. A little downer version of the movie The Matrix. Right?
Star Wars.
Pardon? Star Wars. Man, all that stuff. So energy is something that's always existed and always will. It's love.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, guys.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So that was some definitions of energy.
So yeah, that guy, the Steven, the energy healer, actually gave me a complimentary, energy healing at the end of the show. We have video of that.
Did he give you like a 12-ounce container of energy you could take home with
no,
you?
No, he had me sit in a chair, close my eyes, and he, according to Ethan, who was videographing, waved his hands around my head, touched it in various spots, and whispered things into my ear.
Unfortunately, we didn't actually get it recorded, but the book dealer...
Yeah, the guy at the beginning, he actually was quite insulting. He sort of constructed this example of how you can get people how you can transfer energy to other people. And he said, hey, what if I come up to you and say, hey, you're an arsehole? And, what kind of energy do you feel there? I'm like, I think this guy is just insulting me. You heard in the previous recording, he constructed another example to call me a vacuum.
Yeah. Well, we throw around the well, we actually heard the term energy so much, I kind of looked it up, and here's a definition that I think is reasonably good, but I'll throw it out to my my fellow skeptics here. So energy cannot be created or destroyed, only change from one form to another. That's basically thermodynamics right there.
The first law, I think.
Yeah. It's essentially the ability to do work, which sounds cryptic, I think. But energy is basically what allows us to do any kind of action.
I've heard it described in children's physics textbooks as energy makes things go.
Right. And the energy they're referring to in the show is kind of this sort of all-encompassing spiritual energy.
They're describing it like the Force, as I think you insinuated with your description.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I think they really have two concepts. Because, I mean, one of it, they're trying to play upon real science, right? Where Einstein says mass is energy, energy is mass. So everything in the universe is energy. And in one sense, that's true. But then they're also trying to tack on this non-scientific version of, you know, the soul, or there's this the chakra he's mentioning, you know, is, goes through a prism and becomes all that, and that other kind of energy.
Exactly. So, I mean, very kind of nebulous definitions that's not particularly helpful. I kind of remarked to Rob that I think they're just trying to insert as many buzzwords as they possibly can.
This was an idea that we had, that they're sort of trying to legitimize what they're selling or what they're doing by bringing in scientific terminology, sort of appropriating it to legitimize what they're doing. But I think it also has something to do with a misunderstanding of how energy actually works.
Well, that was a really good show that we just did. We're running out of time, unfortunately. We have much more to talk about, but hopefully we'll get a chance to do that next week. We'll be having an extended episode. We'll be going on the CITR Fund Drive. So
yes, it's CITR's annual Fund Drive, so we'll have some changes to the format. Stay tuned. It's very exciting.
And before we go, I'd like to remind all our listeners that the UBC Freethinkers have an event coming up this week. It's called The Return of the Swine Flu. It's Thursday, November 12th. 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock at the Woodward Lecture Theater number 5. And it's a presentation by Dr. Robert Tarswell, who's an MD. He's going to be giving a talk about the real dangers, and he's going to put them in context and discuss the scaremongering and the anti-vaccination movement and all those different unfortunate things that are going on. So please check it out. We'll have a link to it, the Facebook group on our webpage.
And I'd like to make a note for anyone in their calendar that November 27th, the Philosophy Department, History Department, and a few of the other clubs are having a fundraiser in the Mass Friday evening to help fight cancer. So pencil that in. More details will come up, but on November 27th.
And this is Rob saying that we're putting some changes to our website. You might see them in the coming weeks or months. Go check it out, radiofreethinker.com. Email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. Tell us what you think.
Okay, well, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Have a good night.